Hi there, we are James and Dan, two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favourite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's minds.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a knot.
Very good. I go on here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words Jesus Saves written on his bib had a heart attack, but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That is amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts.
This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 3 o'clock on this Friday afternoon. Plenty to talk about after the big news last night coming out of Millwall that Neil Harris has stepped down as the manager of the Championship Club following 4 years in charge as the Millwall boss. We'll be getting the reaction from Ted Robinson from the No One Likes Us Talking podcast. Obviously, the Millwall Fan Show obviously is on tonight, so you can hear more of their thoughts on that. Plenty of Championship fixtures to look ahead to this weekend before we head into the international break. Stoke boss Nathan Jones says the club's owners are fully behind him despite their winless start to the Championship season. How much longer will he last as the Stoke boss? We'll also be talking about Hull, Brentford and Cardiff in this next hour. If you want to get in contact with us, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport. We're also on WhatsApp. This is the Championship Fan Show here on Love Sport. So plenty to talk about over this next hour as we build up to another weekend of Championship action. As I said, if you want to get in contact with us, share your views on whether you're a Stoke fan and demanding that Nathan Jones be sacked, or a Millwall fan devastated at the news that Neil Harris has left the club, call us on 0208 70 20 558. We want to hear from you this afternoon, or WhatsApp us here at Love Sport Radio. We want to hear your voice and your opinions on your club. Obviously, these are the final round of fixtures before the next international break. We'll also be talking about Hull, Brentford and Cardiff later in the hour. At the top of the table, Swansea flying at the top with Leeds at the bottom. Stoke in a miserable state, as are Huddersfield and Barnsley. Carlo from the Reds report the other day, we were hoping that he would be able to serve his birthday with a win against Derby, but it ended in a 2-2 draw. But the big news overnight was the news that Neil Harris has stepped down as the manager of Millwall after more than 4 years in charge. The Lions are winless in their past 7 league matches and are 18th, 5 points above the relegation zone. I'm sure that came as a shock to many Millwall fans, and we're going to get the views of Ted Robinson from the No One Likes Us Talking fan show podcast. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Ted. Give me your thoughts on this news. Were you really quite surprised and shocked when this news came out last night?
Well, I've got to be honest, Kieran, I've just got back in the country from Portugal, and it was a shock, but in some ways I'm not surprised, if that makes sense. I don't know that it does, but I was shocked because I know Neil. I've spoken to Neil in the past. He's such a passionate guy, and there was no way that Millwall would ever sack Neil. It would have to be Neil that walked. So for whatever reason, Neil feels it's the right time for him to go, which is a bit baffling when we got Leeds United on Saturday, one of our main games, if you know what I mean. But Neil will have his reasons. That's all I can say. I mean, but ultimately, we all know that with football managers, it comes down to the results and performances. And I think we, as Millwall fans, though, need to be a little bit careful, because there have been one or two people sort of moaning and groaning about Neil Harris recently, and what comes to my mind is what happened with Charlton fans and Alan Kerbyshee when he left. You know, I'm a bit worried now that we could go on a slippery slope down, but it depends who comes in. Obviously now they've got a job of going out and finding a man that's going to take us some way up this table, because we need to stay in the Championship, obviously.
Are you surprised then, Ted, at the timing of it, that perhaps if it had been in the international break, then it may have been more understandable? But are you so surprised that just a couple of days out before a big game on the weekend that Neil Harris has stepped down and stepped aside rather than maybe wait until the weekend? Or do you think Neil Harris knew that his heart wasn't completely still in it and therefore it would have been perhaps not fair on the fans to have kept going into this weekend knowing that he was going to resign anyway?
Well, that is the one thing with Neil, Kieran. He would only do what he thought was best for Millwall Football Club. Neil is not a selfish man in that respect. You know, he wouldn't have wanted to go into the Leeds game just for one last hurrah, if you know what I mean, thinking if we win, then I'm going to leave. Neil Harris would always do what he thought was in the best interest of Millwall Football Club. But it does surprise me a little bit, you know, with Leeds United, to a lot of us Millwall fans, it's our biggest game of the season, you know, and they're flying high and there's nothing more than we like than to bring people at the top of the table down a peg or two. And so from that reason, I am a bit surprised that he did decide that, you know, last night was the right moment to do it. And I think it would have been better just to have had one last game, personally, one last game for whatever his reasons afterwards. But I suppose he thinks, you know, we'll now have literally a fortnight before the next game after tomorrow. And in that time, I'm sure they'll find a replacement for him.
When you have a statistic, Ted, like the fact that the Lions are winless in their past seven league matches, just 18th, only 5 points above the relegation zone, does that maybe indicate that it is the right time for a new manager? Or do you think that that's sometimes a bit of a rash reaction so early on in the season?
Well, I noticed that Neil was one of the longest-serving managers in the Championship, if not the longest-serving one. And sometimes, you know, things happen where it just goes stale. And we all know, Kieran, the bottom line is results and performances. I think there's been a few games recently where we've had a good half and a bad half, and the bad half's been very bad, if you know what I mean. And so I think that sort of consistency has begun to worry a few people, and it's gone on for 10 games now, which is, you know, best part of a quarter through the season, isn't it? So I think we've been a little bit disappointed by the results, and the results are everything, as we know, for managers. And maybe is the time for a change, and I'm sure that's what Neil thinks himself, because I cannot see any other reason for him to walk away like he's done. And I know it would have been a really, really hard decision for Neil, because I know how much he loves the club, he loves the supporters, he loves everything about Millwall. So there's no way that he would have taken this decision lightly. It probably was the hardest decision he's ever made, but he would have done it with all the best intentions, I'm sure.
We've talked, Ted, in the past about how intrinsic Neil Harris is to Millwall, how he's kind of Mr. Millwall himself. Where does he go down in terms of all-time greats, both in terms of players and managers? Obviously, Neil played for the club in 432 appearances over two spells. Obviously, he's managed them for the last 4 years. Where does he rank amongst the club greats in all the kind of job titles that you have at a club?
I think there's no doubt that, obviously, being the all-time goal scorer, he's a legend in that respect. But I also think he's got every right to be called a legend as a manager. He's done very well for us as a manager. You know, the promotions that we've got and the success we've had under Neil. It's difficult with Millwall. We're trying to be established as a Championship side. You know, everybody of us that go down there, we all dream of one day actually getting into the Premier League. But, you know, it's a massive, massive ask. And Neil's tried his best, and perhaps he feels it's just a step too far. Kenny Jackett was a similar sort of thing. He got us into the Championship, but then just couldn't go any further. But I think Neil's been a remarkable manager as well as a remarkable player. And all in all, he's a remarkable man. And I think he will be always regarded as a Millwall legend.
Obviously, the attention now, Ted, turns to who will be the man to replace club legend Neil Harris at Millwall. You look at some of the odds early doors, the likes of Chris Hughton are high up on that list. Who would be kind of your ideal choice to take over, and who perhaps is a realistic choice as well to be the next Millwall manager?
Well, Chris Hughton is obviously a very good manager. Whether he'd be prepared to come to Millwall or not, I don't know. I see Tony Pulis, his name was mentioned. Another guy who might actually understand me. Although the most important thing is, Kieran, I do believe that we are a bit of a unique club with a unique fan base. And I think what we need is a manager that comes in and understands Millwall as a football club. Neil Harris knew that in abundance because he was a player. So I think whatever manager we get, has to have an understanding and get what Millwall's all about for him to be any sort of success. In recent past, we've liked to go with, obviously, Neil being an ex-player, somebody that knew the side from within. So I wouldn't rule that out. But I do believe, personally, that we do need an experienced manager, someone like a Tony Pulis or Chris Hughton, that's had recent history of the Championship, that would, I think, come in and take us to where we want to be, which is at least the top half of the Championship.
As you mentioned then, Ted, up next for Millwall is a pretty tough game tomorrow against Leeds. You have a pretty good away record at the start of this season before we head into the international break. Do you think, are things much harder going into tomorrow's game because Neil Harris is no longer the manager, and how positive, confident or lacking in confidence are you going into this game about Millwall picking up a positive result?
Well, we always seem to trouble Leeds for some reason or the other. No matter how good Leeds seem to be, when they come to the Den, they seem to struggle, and I'm hoping that will continue tomorrow. Obviously, I think it could go one of two ways, Kieran. They might come out with a sort of determination to show Neil what he's missing, in a sense, or what they should have done for Neil in the recent past, you know. I think if we can get at them like we normally do at home, we could cause Leeds a lot of problems tomorrow. It's going to be difficult. I understand Adam Barrett's been put in charge, so it'd be a difficult one for Adam. But I can tell Adam now, if he wins tomorrow and he doesn't manage Millwall again, he'll go down as a legend, because anyone that beats Leeds United as manager of Millwall, we're happy with, if you know what I mean. But Leeds are a good side. They are a good side, but I think we might well surprise them tomorrow. Fingers crossed anyway.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Ted, and I hope you had a great holiday over in Portugal. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Ted. That was Ted Robinson from No One Likes Us Talking. Remember, you can catch the Millwall Fan Show every Friday night, tonight, 9 till 10, with No One Likes Us Talking and Matt Beadle. So make sure, any Millwall fans out there, that you tune in to the Millwall Fan Show 9 till 10 every Friday night here on Love Sport Radio. And yeah, not great timing for Millwall, but you'd imagine that, it, as Ted was mentioning there, it would have been a decision that Neil Harris wouldn't have taken lightly at all. He'd have thought long and hard about it. He's Millwall through and through. Played so many times, over 400 times for Millwall as a player, scored over 100 goals for Millwall, and has been managing for the last 4 years. So he perhaps would have been eating away at him, that decision as to whether to step aside. Ted mentioned that Millwall wouldn't sack him, he'd have to resign, and he did resign last night. It came as a big, big shock to many. Ted was very, very shocked to hear that news that Neil Harris has stepped aside. Millwall currently in 18th place on 11 points, 5 points just above the relegation zone. But as the Championship is, you get a couple of wins, suddenly the table can look very, very different. And obviously the question now turns to who will be the man to replace Neil Harris at Millwall. So many names thrown into the mix, as they usually are when a vacancy becomes available. But we'll have to wait and see as to who Millwall make that decision as to who they replace him with. Remember, we head into an international break after this weekend, so Millwall do have a little bit of time, probably not a bad time to have this to make that informed decision as to who is the man to replace Neil Harris as the Millwall manager. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. Up next, we'll be turning our attention to all things Hull.
Love Sport.
This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 3 o'clock this afternoon. If you want to get in contact with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp, so we want to hear from you this afternoon. As I mentioned a few moments ago, we're going to be covering Hull now, who currently sit 13th in the Championship table on 13 points. And to talk us through Hull's start and also looking ahead to their game against Huddersfield, I'm delighted to say that John T. Coleman, a digital football writer for Hull Live and the Hull Daily Mail, joins us this afternoon. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, John T. It seems like Hull are gaining a little bit of momentum. Two wins and two draws from the last four games. It's all about momentum in the Championship, and it does seem like Grant McCann is starting to get a little bit of that.
Definitely. I think throughout this season, performances have been there, even in games where, you know, they've fallen to defeat or they've had draws in matches where they should have had wins. But finally, they're starting to turn performances into the points that they need and probably deserve. I think the win over Sheffield Wednesday in midweek, it kind of showed a bit of evolution already throughout this season. They've just been, as a team, they're starting to act a little bit more almost streetwise, really, in the sense that their game management's a lot better. They just held themselves really well. We didn't look liable to conceding. They scored one goal and won a game for the first time this season, which is, you know, a huge turning point for them. So yeah, it's all starting to tick for Grant McCann's side, just leading into another international break.
And Hollow looking to win consecutive away league matches for the first time since December of last year. Obviously, teams pride themselves on their home form, but does that perhaps highlight the inconsistency of Hull, that they're not even able, or haven't been for a while, to put two away consecutive away wins together?
I think a lot of that stems to their form at the back end of the Nigel Adkins era last season. They had, after Christmas, they had a dreadful run of away results. I think they lost about five or six in a row at the start of this year. And it started to pick up just before he left. To be fair to Grant McCann in the Championship, he has been getting some good away results and got a good point away at Brentford, same again at Millwall, first win at Luton. So I think he hasn't really had many away matches in the Championship. The only one where he has lost was at Swansea, which is on the opening day of the season against the Swansea side, who have surprised many already this season. So on the face of it at the time, it didn't look like a great result. But looking back of how Swansea started, it really doesn't look like a bad result at all. So in fairness to them, I think their away form has looked pretty solid, in fairness. And against Luton a fortnight ago, they were just solid and they just took their chances. They were clinical at the end of that game, and they probably didn't, 3-0 was quite a flattering scoreline, but they definitely deserved the win, to say the least.
We've talked in the past, Jonty, about how impressive Jarrod Bowen is. He scored 5 goals and assisted 2 already this season. But are we starting to see other players start to contribute a little bit more? Kamil Grosicki now has 4 goals and 1 assist. Are we starting to see a little bit less burden on Jarrod Bowen and actually other players beginning to step up?
Last year, there was a huge focus on the front three, which of Jarrod Bowen, Kamil Grosicki and Fraser Campbell. With Campbell gone, there was always going to be who's going to replace him, and is there going to be even more pressure on Bowen and Grosicki? At the start of the season, it was already obvious that was going to happen. I think it took about 9 or 10 league goals for City to score. It was at Luton, actually, Kevin Stewart's first goal, where City scored a goal that wasn't either scored or set up by Bowen and Grosicki, which, you know, kind of highlights their influence. But Kamil Grosicki, I'll say a word on him, he's been fantastic in the last few weeks. Before Tuesday's win over Sheffield Wednesday, he scored 4 goals in consecutive matches, 3 of those free kicks. And even in games where he wasn't performing great, he just felt as if he was going to come up with something and score. He was again really good in midweek, didn't actually get a goal, unfortunately. He had a free kick in the first half, and you thought that the form he was currently on, it was definitely going in. But now he's been really good. 2 other players that have looked particularly outstanding. Kevin Stewart in midfield sort of revolutionised himself as the metronome in Grant McCann's midfield. He's just sat, kept everything ticking over really nicely, which has been, it's been really crucial to them. And obviously he was rewarded with his first couple of goals away at Luton after, I think, 58 appearances for the game. And Jordy Device at the back, playing alongside Reece Burt, formerly of West Ham. Device has looked excellent. And back end of last season, well, throughout the whole of last season, he always seems to have a bit of a mistake in him, but he's still quite young. Whereas this year, he's just looked really solid in the last few games. He's been excellent. Got a reward with his goal against Cardiff last weekend, which should have been a match winner if they hadn't conceded in stoppage time. So yeah, the pressure is starting to slowly go away from Bowen. He's actually been quite quiet in the last few weeks. But because of how well Grosicki has been performing, he's kind of got away with it, and the pressure is slowly starting to ease off him.
Looking ahead then to this weekend's game for Hull, it's an away game at Huddersfield. Hull have only lost 1 of their last 13 league meetings with the Terriers. Because Hull are starting to get a little bit of momentum, do you think we could see Grant McCann name an unchanged side, which would surely help with the consistency and continuity going forward for Hull?
I personally think there will be one change tomorrow, and that'll come up front. Tommy's finally got his first goal for Hull in midweek. It was a great header on the end of Eric Lehigh's cross, winning him the game against local rival Sheffield Wednesday. And yeah, it's kind of, at the minute, even McGuinness have failed to score in the Championship so far until midweek. So, Eve's header, is a great one. I think it's got to earn him his first a place back in the side. He'd been dropped for the last two in place with McGuinness. But I'd say that he definitely deserves it. Bar that, I would go unchanged. I think that Brandon Fleming at left back, young teenager, then he made, I think, four championship starts in his career. He's sort of established himself whilst Kingsley and Callum Elder have been struggling with injuries. And the midfield three of Stewart, George Honeyman and Jackson Irvine, you know, they look like City's best trio for the time being. So I think it should be one change. He definitely deserves a start after that goal. He would have got a whole lot of confidence out of it. And as is always the case with strikers, once you're getting goals, no matter how they're going in, it's all about confidence. So they've got to make the most of these. Now he's on that sort of high.
Do you think that looking at this game, Danny Cowley has only just secured his first win as the Huddersfield manager? Do you think this is quite a dangerous fixture because Huddersfield have made that change now and Danny Cowley's got that monkey off his back? Do you think it may have been an easier game had Huddersfield still been looking for that first win, having not beaten in Stoke midweek? Or do you still think, considering Huddersfield are down in second bottom, only on 5 points, that this is an opportunity to gain even more momentum and get a second consecutive away win, as I said, for the first time since December 2018?
I think if you had predicted that Huddersfield would have only been on 5 points after 10 league matches of the season, you'd be very, very surprised, especially having just come down from the Premier League. The squad didn't change too much, only lost a couple of players. And, you know, you always thought they were going to be decent, probably the weaker of the three teams coming down, but still not of the position they would be at. So in terms of results this season, now is definitely, you know, I don't think there'll be much of a better time to play them apart from maybe a couple of weeks ago, when it was all going wrong under Jan Sywer. But Danny Cowley started to get a couple of results together. I was sort of more worried, perhaps, that if they hadn't beaten Stoke in midweek, that it would have been even tougher for Hull because it would have been, you know, home crowd on side, desperate for that win, local game, and you think that maybe that would have been a perfect opportunity for them to change it around. But I think Hull are in really good form at the minute. It wouldn't have helped that Huddersfield have, you know, unbeaten in two for first time probably quite a while. So, but I think that in terms of how many people expected to see these two teams in the league leading into this game, you wouldn't have expected this at all. So it is probably a bit of a golden opportunity to play Huddersfield right now.
And just finally then, Johnsy, how would you assess Hull's start to the year? 10 games in, 13 points in 13th place, so pretty much slap bang in the middle. They're only 5 points off the playoff spots at the moment, 5 points behind the likes of Preston and Fulham, who are currently occupying some of those playoff spots. So how would you assess their start and have your views changed on, in terms of your objective, how you think the team should target this season?
I personally thought going into the season that it was always going to be tough. I didn't expect Jared Bowen to stay. I didn't expect Kamal Grzycki to stay. So, and on that basis, because I thought they're just going to be irreplaceable players, I thought that anything above, sort of comfortably above relegation zone for like 17th, 18th would have been a good season. However, after watching, you know, their opening 10 league matches, 13th is actually slightly underwhelming for them. They've been playing really well. But the issue is, in a lot of games, was throwing away points from leading positions. I think they've already dropped 7 points from leading positions. You mentioned earlier, only 5 points off the top six. You take, you know, a high percentage or even all of those 7 points, and all of a sudden you're a point or two off the top two and you're comfortably in those playoffs. Grant McCann's already said, but I think he as a manager has felt that they've dropped about 10 points this season. He's a very ambitious manager, and he won't let those standards drop. He's built a belief in and around that squad that not only are they capable of reaching the top six, but it's kind of being driven into them. And I think that from the outside looking in, it would be easy to suggest that 13th is OK, given I think they finished 13th last season. So, and there's been sort of quite a lot of change over the summer, change of the coaching and playing staff. So I think you would take 13th off that basis. But performance-wise, say 13th is probably maybe even a little bit harsh, but I think that the performances in recent weeks have shown that they are starting to climb up the table, and maybe if they can continue to, you know, take results as they have been in the last couple of weeks against the likes of Luton and Sheffield Wednesday, then perhaps they might surprise a few people this season.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Jonty. That was Jonty Coleman, digital football writer for Hull Live and the Hull Daily Mail, talking us through Hull, who are gaining a little bit of momentum now. And you hear it so often in the Championship, but it is absolutely instrumental to having a good season. No matter where you are, going unbeaten and not losing games is massively important. Even though Hull have only won two of the last four, they've drawn the other two. So it keeps that positive mentality going. It keeps the confidence that if you win two but then lose two, then that inconsistency can really get on your nerves. But Hull slap bang really in the middle of the table on 13 points in 13th place. And as I said, they are only 5 points off the playoff spot. So it does just show that it is still very, very close in the Championship. And all it takes is just a couple of wins and you can suddenly find yourself rocketing up that table. If you've got any views out there on your Championship club, where they're at the moment, whether you're a Swansea or a Leeds fan right at the top, or whether you're a Stoke or a Huddersfield fan right down the bottom, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. We want to hear from you this afternoon. We're going to continue looking ahead to the Championship action this weekend for Brentford. Their next game is a tough one at High Flyers Nottingham Forest, who've been one of the surprise packages of this season so far. So we'll be talking all things Brentford next.
This is Love Sport.
This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 3 o'clock this afternoon. If you want to get in contact with us, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp, so make sure you get in tune with us this afternoon. And we're going to be talking all things Brentford now. I'm delighted to say that Billy the B. Grant from Besotted Pride of West London podcast and the Brentford Fan Show joins us this afternoon. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Billy. Looking back at the midweek action, it was a 1-1 draw at home against Bristol City after Andreas Weimann scored a late equaliser. Did you come away from that game thinking, we really should have got 3 points from that?
Absolutely. We were really gutted after that game. I mean, we put in a good performance. We played really well. And to be quite honest with you, Bristol City didn't have much of a sniff. I think they had one chance on goal when there was a bit of a defensive error. And luckily, Raya actually kind of rescued us. And he saved us there. But other than that, it was all Brentford. They actually did really, really well.
Thomas Frank, the manager, said after the game how his side were clearly better on the day. Brentford had 63% possession, also had 18 shots. This will be one of those games where Thomas Frank will be coming away from just wondering how they've wasted an opportunity to get 3 points against a good side in Bristol City.
Yeah, I mean, Bristol City were a good... I mean, I'd say they're a good side. If you speak to the Bristol City fans, we do a post-match podcast, Pride of West.London. Spoke to lots of City fans, and they were saying how good we were, and they thought that they actually weren't that good, because even though we thought that they were harrying us, they were playing the ball around, they weren't really doing anything with it in the final third. Very much like what Brentford are a lot of the time. So for them, they were thinking, you're much the better side. We're almost embarrassed to have actually taken 2 points off of you. And for us as well, like I said to you, letting that goal, because what happens is Thomas Frank switched it in the last probably 5 minutes or so, decided to, instead of going attacking, because we were attacking them all the time, Sergi Canos on the wing back was pushing them, pressing them really hard, took off Canos. To be fair, he just got a yellow card after he'd been thrown over the barriers by one of their players. So he got yellow carded for that. I think Thomas Frank decided to take him off, but instead of replacing like by like, he actually put on Ethan Pinnock, who's a defender. So we went five at the back, stroke three at the back. So we got more defensive. Our belief is when the ball came down, it came out of the wings, it went across. The players are still trying to organise themselves. They didn't quite know who to pick up. Wyman's at the back there, and he got his header in. And it's really frustrating because it was only their second chance of the game. And I think these type of situations are which show, you know, certain clubs from other clubs. You see people like, you know, Forest, they go and lick little points without doing, you know, without being particularly brilliant. For us, you know, we've been very good and we haven't got what we deserve. So we need to be really working on that.
Were you surprised, Billy, at how much perhaps Brentford dominated this game? Because Bristol City have made a pretty good start to the season. They're currently seventh on 17 points, just 1 point off the playoffs. So were you surprised that in terms of the performance, that Brentford had 63% possession? They had 18 shots and actually were the better side, and as you mentioned, should have got all 3 points.
I was quite surprised because, again, when we did our research before, Bristol City looked like one of the top sides in the division. They scored a lot of goals. OK, they're letting quite a few goals, but they look like a really good side. So for us, the fact that we actually went out there, I think it just goes to show you what a decent side that we actually are. We just need to make sure that we keep on our A game. We could beat any side in this division. I know it's a real cliche, but we can. You know, we could beat any side in the division, you know. So, but we, you know, but at the end of the day, we didn't do it. And we need to make sure that in future, we're a little bit more prepared for games like this.
One man that's been in pretty fine form this season is Ollie Watkins. He scored 7 goals. He was the man that kind of was shoehorned in as the man who could replace Neil Maupay as a centre-forward, even though there were doubts over whether he could transition from a forward into an out-and-out centre-forward. Are you completely sold, Billy, on the fact that he is the long-term centre-forward and that he can play there long-term and score the number of goals or a similar number of goals to what Neil Maupay provided last year?
I think what's the most important thing is that Ollie Watkins is obviously very adaptable. He's a top scorer in the league. We've asked him to score goals. He's learnt the trade and he's doing it and he's doing very well. He gets relatively few chances, but the chance he gets, he's putting them away at the back of the net. If you offered him to any team in our division, they'd buy him. I think what we have to be a little bit more concerned about is the fact that other players aren't scoring goals. We need to get other people out there scoring goals. If we start scoring goals from the midfield, from the wings, like we used to do back in the day, it'll be all over for us.
Looking ahead then to the next game, Billy, it's looking like a tough one. Tomorrow afternoon, 3 o'clock kickoff game to Nottingham Forest. They're one of the high flyers, a real surprise package, fourth place at the moment, 19 points, just a couple of points off the top of the table. Is this looking like a much more difficult task than perhaps we would have expected a month or two ago?
I think Forest, looking at them all season, you know, Lamucci's actually got them really, really playing really well. So it's going to be a tough game, but to be honest with you, you know, I think that we've just got to go there with a positive attitude. I think that what the problem with Brentford a little bit, we've been a little bit, probably a little bit negative because we were letting in so many goals last season. I think we need to trust ourselves a little bit. We've gone 5 at the back the whole time, which has worked for us. But to be honest with you, we've got some great players up there. And I think if we start attacking and playing the attacking football, I think we'll be all right. So Forest fans are actually very nervous about us. We're very nervous about us actually playing them. So to be honest with you, I haven't got any fear.
And just finally then, Billy, Brentford are currently 15th on 12 points. Is the way of describing Brentford's start to the season as we head into this second international break as inconsistent, that they've been a little bit indifferent at the start of the season?
It has been indifferent. It's been inconsistent, but it's getting better. And it's going to take these players a bit of while to gel. And we are getting better. So it's nice that we've got this second break. I think after this, in about a month's time, trust us, mate, we're going to be properly back on form. So everyone's going to be fearing us. So don't worry, it's a 9-month season.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Billy. That was Billy the B Grant from Besotted Pride of West London podcast and the Brentford Fan Show. Remember, you can catch the Brentford Fan Show with Besotted every Monday evening between 8 and 9 o'clock. So make sure if you're a Brentford fan out there that you tune in to the Brentford Fan Show every Monday night between 8 and 9 p.m. Brentford were one of the sides at the start of the season that many were expecting big things from. Now, yes, they lost Neil Maupay over the summer to Brighton for around £20 million, and he was utterly brilliant for Brentford last season. Ezri Konsa moved to Aston Villa for around £12 or £13 million. They brought in experience in the form of Pontus Janssen. That was seen as a real coup. From Leeds. Maybe had Leeds got promoted, we wouldn't have seen Pontus Janssen leave. But also, if you remember rightly, in that game against Aston Villa, the infamous one where Leeds scored the goal in controversial circumstances and allowed Villa to then just dribble straight from kickoff to score, Janssen was one of those that didn't get the memo and tried to clear it. Maybe relations went downhill from there, but he made the move to Brentford. A lot of experience going to Brentford, one of the top centre-backs in the Championship, making the move from Leeds to Brentford. But it has been indifferent. We just heard from Billy there. He's very confident that in the very near future, by the time we get to the next international break in November, that Brentford will be much higher up the league table. Again, we talk about that word momentum. It is so key in the Championship. If you talk about a 6 or 7 game run, you don't need to win 6 out of 6, 7 out of 7. But if you're winning 4 of them and drawing 2, then that positivity just continues to run through and you can find yourself rocketing up that Championship table. You look at it at the moment, some people say it's still far too early, even 10 games in, to be looking at the table considering there are 46 games in a league season. You look at Brentford at the moment, they're 15th, which doesn't sound on the face of it particularly great. And I would say that one thing for Brentford is the inconsistency, that they haven't quite got going yet. But actually, they're on 12 points. They're only 6 points off Preston in 6th. They're then only 7 points off West Brom, who are in 3rd. that just shows that it's a couple of wins. And Brentford are a side fully capable over the next five or six games of getting a number of wins and finding themselves going up the table. You look at their next four fixtures, one of them before the international break, which is the Nottingham Forest game we were talking about, which looks tough on the face of it. Fourth place Forest against Brentford. After the international break, Brentford host Millwall, who potentially they will have a new manager by that point after Neil Harris's resignation last night. Then a tough trip away to Swansea and then away to QPR. So it isn't easy. Some tough games in there. But if Brentford can, over the next five or six games between this international break and the next international break, gaining some sort of momentum, you can find yourself going from a position where you're looking around mid-table, things not looking brilliant, to suddenly, right, being in the playoff picture. It's also in the Championship all about when you time your run, that you don't want to peak too soon. And potentially last season, yes, they threw it away, but also Leeds didn't time their momentum, that they lost momentum just at the wrong time as they headed into the latter stage of the season. Aston Villa, the perfect example of a side that when Dean Smith took over, obviously a former Brentford man, that they were nowhere to be seen in mid-table, midway through the season, but they just went on a great run the second half of the season. They're now playing Premier League football away at Norwich tomorrow, obviously another newly promoted side. So for Brentford, who were very hotly tipped at the start of the season, many people expecting good things from them, it is all about momentum. Suddenly, between as Billy was mentioning, between this international break and the next one, if you go on an unbeaten run, you don't need to win every game, but if you go unbeaten through that stretch, then you can find yourself rocketing up that table and suddenly you can be right in the playoff mix when at the moment it seems like quite a way off. Remember, if you want to get in contact with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp, so we want to hear from you this afternoon. If you're a Brentford fan, how do you feel about your start to the season and that tough game away at Nottingham Forest? I'm sure if you're a Swansea, Leeds, West Brom, Nottingham Forest fan out there, you must be pretty delighted with the way things are going. Stoke, Nathan Jones is still there. He said that he's been given the full backing of the board. That is code word for, no, I haven't. I'm about to be sacked if I don't get a win. Whenever a manager starts spouting out about having the full backing and support of his owners, alarm bells must start ringing. 2 points from their first 10 games. A loss to Huddersfield in midweek. They are now 6 points away from safety. And Nathan Jones saying he'd gambled his wife's life, he'd gambled his staff's life, in a pretty honest assessment in an interview earlier this week when they lost to Huddersfield. You'd imagine, unless Stoke win well this weekend and they travel to Swansea, what a tough game against its top versus bottom there, Nathan Jones. By the time we come back at the start of next week, it could be that Stoke are also looking for a new manager. It seems pretty likely. Up next, we'll be turning our attention to all things Cardiff.
Love Sport.
This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 3 o'clock this afternoon. If you want to get in touch with us, call us on 0208 70 2558. We're going to talk all things Cardiff now, and I'm delighted to say that Ben James, writer and founder of View from the Ninian, joins us this afternoon. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Ben. It wasn't that long ago that we were... I suppose I was questioning Neil Warnock, but his favourite kind of phrase of all time is all about momentum in the Championship, going on an unbeaten run. And Cardiff are starting to get things going. They're currently 10th, 16 points, just a couple of points off the playoffs. It just shows, doesn't it, Ben, that in the space of a few weeks, you win a couple of games, you go on a bit of an unbeaten run, suddenly the perspective looks very, very different.
Yeah, I think, you know, after this week's game where we kind of demolished, probably undeservedly, but I'm not going to complain about that, QPR, and I think things are all of a sudden looking very rosy. It seems like a long time ago since we went to Reading and were demolished live on Sky, and I think we're about seven, eight games unbeaten now. Only, like you say, 3 points off the playoffs, and, you know, everyone was looking at West Brom as being the favourites, and everyone's looking at West Brom as kind of one of the favourites to go up and up in that top three at the moment, but we're only a win behind them in that sense, and I think tomorrow's game could be really interesting because of that.
It was a very emphatic win for Cardiff, who obviously they've leapfrogged now QPR. 3-0 goals from Sean Morrison, Marlon Pack, as well as Callum Patterson securing that win.
Yep.
Only 28% possession. Is that kind of got Neil Warnock written all over it? That at home, they didn't even have 30% possession, but the scoreline shows, well, what a comfortable victory.
Yeah, I mean, it's the most Warnock performance of all time, I think, when you consider I think QPR hit the post, they kind of dominated the passing and dominated the possession stats. I've kind of argued all season, really, that it's Warnock plays in such a way that it's not what you do, it's not how much you have the ball, it's what you do when we have it. And I think even this week showed that, really. We put away our chances. We got Sean Morrison back in the goals and Patson back in the goals as well, which is a big boost for us. And I think Warnock is down and dirty in the Championship, and I think he showed that with the win against QPR. There was kind of, if the scoreline had been fair, it probably would have been 3-0 QPR, but there we go.
One of the goals that you mentioned was from Sean Morrison, and mm-hmm. one of the comments Neil Warnock made after the game was about set pieces being important in any league, that he said they've got Sean Morrison back in the goals as well, thank goodness. Do you think last season we didn't see enough of that from Cardiff? My memory serves me rightly, though, Cardiff should have actually had a few more penalties than the amount that Sean Morrison was manhandled in the penalty area. But do you think that's maybe one of the regrets that Neil Warnock had from last season, that they were quite clearly impressive in the Championship at using mm-hmm. the likes of Sean Morrison from set pieces? They've shown it already at the start of this season that obviously you can live in regrets and what ifs, but do you think that's one of Cardiff's biggest weapons, their prowess in an attacking sense from set pieces?
Yeah, I think if you look at last season, I think there was the game away at Huddersfield where we drew 0-0, but Sean Morrison missed an absolute sitter, basically an open goal. Like you say, with the penalties, I remember us playing at Craven Cottage where Mitrovic just stood on the ground and pulled Morrison down as soon as he jumped in the air, and no penalties were given. But also, I think the blame does need to be apportioned to Sean Morrison, because I think he was a bit overawed at the start of the season last year. I think went into the Premier League, wasn't sure what to expect, and was probably a bit more kind of naive when it came to the set pieces. And I think this season we've already seen Flint get amongst the goals. I think, you know, one of the main reasons we signed Flint, for other than his defensive prowess, is that I think that season against at Bristol City where he scored 10-11 goals. And I think it, you know, Warnock's looking at that. If we've got Sean Morrison who can get 5 or 6 goals, if you've got Flint who can get 5 or 6 goals, that's 12 goals coming from the defence that other teams don't have. And I think Morrison needed that confidence boost. He gets into the box and he gets close to the ball, and but getting it into the net, and I think that will kind of set him up over the next 2 weeks to get a few more, hopefully.
Warnock also mentioned after the game how pleased he was with the game management, with how well organised Cardiff were. Mm-hmm. Again, talking about the set pieces in addition to that. But is that going to be the key for Cardiff going forward this season, that they're not necessarily going to be the most free-flowing side? That's not something you'd expect from a Neil Warnock side, but he's a pragmatic guy. It's all about game management being on point, and also being yeah. about a well-organised side that, on occasions, Cardiff are the sort of side that once they get into their rhythm, are the sort of side that can often win games. Ugly, they can win games by just the odd goal because of the organisation. Is that going to have to be key? If it's not quite on point, then Cardiff are going to struggle to get any momentum?
I think so. I think that's the main reason we signed someone like Marlon Pack. I think when he came in, we were instantly a better team because we had a spine of sort of Morrison, Flint, Marlon Pack, and then Glatzel up front. And I think Pack brings that organisation in the midfield that no one else does. He's not the kind of player who's going to get forward, even though he did score the other night, but he's the kind of man who's going to sit in that sort of 30-yard area around the centre circle and just take the ball and pass it on. And I think that's hugely important when it comes to grinding out those victories, because he's not going to panic on the ball. He's not going to boot it away and give possession back. And that means that he frees up the defence not to be passing the ball around, or he can free up the defence to, when Morrison may be under a bit of pressure, he can make that angle, take the pass, and then knock it back to Morrison, or play it out to the wings or whatever he does. And I think that's going to be hugely important against teams like, you know, when you look at West Brom, and I think this is no offence to QPR, I think a team with more attacking intent or more kind of Championship savvy players might have done better on Tuesday. But when it comes to West Brom, I think if we can grind out results where we're beating QPR 3-0 with 28% possession, then that holds up well for a team like West Brom. We've got really good attacking players who are going to probably pose a bit more of an attacking threat. And if we can take what we learned from the QPR game into games like West Brom, then I think we're setting ourselves in good stead.
Interestingly, looking at the team sheet from Cardiff's win against QPR in goal, we talked about this a few weeks ago when Neil Etheridge was coming yeah. back, making a return from injury. He was such a key player, probably Cardiff's best player by quite some way. Actually, he was one of the real outstanding goalkeeping performances from last year in the Premier League. Interestingly, Alex Smithies was the man starting despite the fact that Etheridge is back. Do you think that Etheridge will quickly make his return back into the first team as the number one? Or do you think that until Smithies' perhaps performances start dropping, Etheridge is going to have to be patient and wait for his opportunity?
I think it's more likely the latter. I don't think Smithies has done anything particularly wrong in the run that he's been in. He came in and deputised really well from the off for Etheridge. And I think there were a couple of moments where he was shaky in the first game, so that's to be expected as he hadn't played properly in the best part of the season. But he looked solid. I don't think there's anything really that you would criticise him for over the last few games. Kept a clean sheet against a decent attacking side in QPR. And I think as much as Etheridge is very good, I think Smithies has probably better kicking than Etheridge. I think Etheridge's kicking is very inconsistent and a bit kind of wayward sometimes. And I think until Smithies makes a howler or gets injured or, like you say, his performances drop consistently, I don't think Warnock will be in a rush to replace him. And I think it kind of shows really to the rest of the team that even if you are a superstar from last season, you're not guaranteed your spot. And I think that will kind of create the competition and create the competitive edge that we need.
And just finally, Ben, you mentioned the next game, which is against West Brom away tomorrow afternoon. Mm-hmm. Obviously, West Brom have made an impressive start to the season, third, one of the most fancy sides to go up into the Premier League. It's the first time they've met in the Championship, actually, since February 2010, when they shared a 1-1 draw. Is this going to be a real test? And actually, do you think this is the type of game that Neil Warnock will actually be looking at and thinking, considering Cardiff beat QPR in midweek 3-0 by only having 28% possession, it's probably going to be quite a similar game, and in some ways might that suit Cardiff tomorrow?
I think so. I think considering we've been on this 6-7 game unbeaten run, tomorrow is a big test because West Brom started really well. They've got, you know, people like Austin, they signed Zahor from us in the summer, they've got Robson Kanu, they've got goals in their squad, and I think going to the Hawthorns is one of those grounds. It's old school, it's kind of on top of you, and I think it will be a test for us. But I think knowing that we only had 28% possession but still managed to win 3-0 this week, I think that just puts us in the right frame of mind going into this game, because we can allow West Brom to pass it around, we can allow West Brom to keep the ball in their half, and we don't have to rush and trying to get the ball off them. But we know that we've got goals in us at the other end, and I think if we can kind of go to West Brom and get a result, then I think that sets our stall out then for the next, you know, we've got the international break. But for the next few games after that, which are tough, we've got Swansea, Bristol, Birmingham in a run of four games. And I think if we can get the result, pull ourselves level with West Brom, then we're back amongst the big boys and people might start taking notice of us again.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Ben. That was Ben James, writer and founder of View from the Ninian, looking ahead to Cardiff's game away at West Brom tomorrow. Looking at some of the Championship fixtures, we'll quickly go through them. Friday night, tonight, it is Birmingham up against Middlesbrough. Then on to Saturday, Fulham up against Charlton in the early game. Bristol City take on Reading. Derby at home against Luton. Huddersfield against Hull. Millwall take on Leeds, obviously Neil Harris-less. Nottingham Forest take on Brentford. Preston are at home against Barnsley. QPR host Blackburn. Sheffield Wednesday take on Wigan. Swansea, top of the table, take on Stoke right at the bottom. How much longer will Nathan Jones last at Stoke? And West Brom, as we mentioned, taking on Cardiff. So make sure you enjoy all that Championship action coming up over the weekend before the second international break comes up next week.
This is Love Sport.
Hi there, we are James and Dan Twofort of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favourite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's minds.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a knot.
Very good. I go on here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words Jesus Saves written on his bib had a heart attack but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That is amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts.